It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important story.
Out here in Colorado, we had a sex education bill that was passed. It was signed by the governor and put into law. I just can't believe what is happening to public education.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
We are now using policy that if you don't affirm something, that they use policy then to take away your businesses.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Kids are just being bombarded with darkness.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
You know, we need to get back to letting our kids be kids.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo! Woo-hoo, you have made it. It is hump day. Happy Wednesday to you. I am Kim Munson, and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. Going to be having some great conversations today. I'm thrilled to have in studio with me one of my valued sponsors, partners, and that is Chris Cantwell with Trans World Business Advisors. It's great to have you here.
Good morning, Kim. How are you?
Yeah, it's not too early for you. You're always
never.
Up and going. Yeah, so we're going to have some really important conversations about business. You have a real heart for everyday people being able to thrive and flourish and go after their hopes and dreams. You're in that business.
Yep.
And it's kind of ugly down at the State House right now.
Yes, it is.
So we'll talk about that.
A lot of force.
A lot of force, yes. And we like freedom. We talk about freedom versus force. And it is never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, or their freedom via force, whether with a weapon. We don't really see that in America. It's much more subtle. It's through policy and unpredictable and excessive taxation. And if something is a good idea, you probably really don't need to force people to do it. Right, Chris?
Absolutely.
So that's how we look at these issues. And most people prefer freedom, for sure, for their own lives. Sometimes they don't mind force over here on something else because they think it's not going to affect them. But if you can't stand for freedom over there, then one of these days, watch out, because whatever you care about, they may be putting a whole bunch of force around that as well.
Yes, that's exactly it.
So that is why we do this show, is to help you get your brain around these issues. And yesterday we had Susan Kochevar and Patty Kurgan in as guests, and they're both businesswomen. We were talking about this forced minimum wage, which I know is on your radar. Mm-hmm. And Rosemary, one of our listeners, had texted me and said, instead of calling it the forced minimum wage, we might also call it the Youth Unemployment Act. What do you think of that, Steve?
I like that. We're all sitting here grinning and laughing in a twisted way. That's kind of funny.
Well, it is funny, and it's not, because so instead of these kids being able to get jobs, then, you know, they just idle hands are the devil's workshop. You know, if you don't have something productive to do, you find something to do with your time. Mm-hmm. And actually work, there's real virtue in doing work.
And skills.
And
right?
Skills.
So a lot of these kids now, they never have a job in high school. They go off to college and have $100,000 worth of debt and have never worked a day in their life.
There's something wrong with that picture.
Yes.
Big time wrong on that.
Well, let me back up. The issue at hand is definitely not funny. Just the snarky reference. I love stuff like that.
So instead of forced minimum wage, it's also known as the Youth Unemployment Act. And Chris, you make a really good point. It's those first skills that kids get to know, how to work with the public. Used to be how to figure out change in your mind and make change, but to be able to work with others, to make something successful. And it's really disheartening what is happening. One thing that we didn't talk about yesterday, on this forced minimum wage, we had talked about the restaurant business and that there are restaurants that are closing because they're on really tight margins.
Yeah.
But the other thing is you see your PBIs, your politicians, your bureaucrats, and your interested parties, that they are, I think that many times, like local government, I have talked to local officials as well as county officials, where instead of protecting private property rights, protecting the right for people to go after their hopes and dreams, they think their job is to create revenue through sales tax.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not the proper role of government. In a free market where different municipalities are competing and doing a good job, you're going to see businesses go there. With this forced minimum wage, as restaurants close. We're going to be seeing empty storefronts, mm-hmm. as well as you're going to start to see a ding in sales tax revenue. And then I think you're going to see officials double down on trying to figure out ways to increase taxes. Mm-hmm. And so when government gets involved, there's all kinds of unintended consequences down the road.
Yeah. Yeah. They like to look at just the one group. What group does it affect? But they don't look at all groups.
Mm-hmm.
And you never look at the unintended consequences. And when they do things like force minimum wage, it really hurts the consumer, right? Because the restaurant owner truly makes pennies on a dollar. And so the first thing they have to do is raise their prices. Mm-hmm. And that affects the consumer. It affects those that have the least amount of
disposable
income, right? Mm-hmm. So those people that they're trying to help, it hurts them first the most. It just doesn't make sense. So now the prices go up, restaurants go out of business, they don't employ people. The cycle is why people can't wrap their heads around the unintended consequences of those decisions. It just sounds so good. Well, we're going to make everyone make $14, $15, $16 an hour now. Well, who's going to pay a 16-year-old $16 an hour to stand in the cash register?
Right, right. So as Rosemary says, it is the Youth Unemployment Act.
Yes.
That is and it. Dare I do this, the season, this conversation, every time it pops up, vote buying, whether it's forced minimum wage or free full day kindergarten, whatever they call it, I still think vote buying has a little bit to do with it.
And that's why we do this show, Steve, is because I think deep down we are better than that. And that is why we do this show, is so that we can get our brains around these issues and talk about these with our friends, our family, and our colleagues. And want to say thank you to you, Producer Steve, and the team, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie, for all that you do. And each of you listeners, thank you. You are treasured. You're valued. And strive for excellence today. Take care of your heart, soul, mind, and body. You have a purpose. And so go out and do that. So our inspiration and wisdom for today is from Ronald Reagan. He was born in 1911. He died in 2004. He was the 40th president of the United States, noted for his conservative republicanism, his fervent anti-communism, and his appealing personal style. He was the only movie actor to ever become president, and he had a remarkable skill as an orator that earned him the title the Great Communicator. His policies have been credited with contributing to the demise of Soviet communism, and he started out as a Democrat, and then he became a fervent conservative and Republican. And his quote for today is, work and family are the center of lives, the foundation of our dignity as free people. Chris Cantwell, I thought you'd like that.
That's fantastic. That sounds familiar, by the way. There's somebody else I know that's a president that appears to be quite conservative that started out as a Democrat.
Anybody that we know?
I'll think about that for a minute.
You know, and I think he's actually been surprising us on just the way that, and we're talking about President Trump, is that he is pushing forward conservative principles. And when we talk about conservative, what that means is conserving the ideas that founded this country,
mm-hmm.
that every individual is equal and they have these rights given by God of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, yep. and then the Constitution that was put in place to protect those rights. I was listening to somebody the other day, and they said, I don't think that Donald Trump, you know, knows quotes from Edmund Burke and all these conservative, Russell Kirk or, you know,
yeah.
any, but inherently, he has an appreciation for everyday, hardworking Americans. And Steve, I think that's why he got the reception that he got on Monday night at the LSU Clemson National Championship college game there.
Absolutely. And you know, it's always one step forward and I don't know, one step back. Sometimes you get caught up in that and you think, man, that's an awesome sign of what the undertow might be in the country. And then you hear some idiot explanation, well, that was down in the South. Had that occurred in some other
Washington, D.C.
Yeah. Well, somewhere else in the East Coast and or California, we would have booed him.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, you wouldn't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you booed him because why? Because unemployment is at historical lows for, you know, all this, you know, all people within here in America, and that the economy is doing well. I mean, is that why you would woo him? I don't quite understand that, Chris.
Well, yeah. Here's what I would say. This I think describes it all. So if Donald Trump stayed a Democrat, ran as a Democrat, won as a Democrat, the left would be, he would be a rock star. They would call him Bill Clinton 2.0. They would love him. Mm-hmm. But because he's not, he changed from a D to an R, he's the enemy.
Well, and his policies, though, are typically moving towards freedom. I would say I like about 95% of things that he's put through. I've been a little concerned about this paid parental leave that he did, you know, that's going to expand mm-hmm. that to government workers, because then that trickles down. It makes it difficult for private employers. And I you know, I understand his reasoning on it. That's probably the one thing that I'm like, I'm not, because you see force on that instead of freedom.
Yep.
But 95% of the time, he seems to be moving towards freedom. And I think that's another reason why these radical activists that have taken over the Democrat Party are just whacking out.
Yep.
And so our humor for today, again, is Ronald Reagan. And I said, Steve, what do you think? Is this okay? He says, sure. And Ronald Reagan said, it has been said that politics is the second oldest profession. I have learned that it bears a striking resemblance to the first.
Way to go, Ronnie.
Well, let's see, where to go exactly? I think a quick question. We had Brad Beck on last Friday, and he had been very concerned. He lives up in Erie, and apparently someone went in and hacked their payment system, and the town of Erie, made a $1 million payment not to SEMA Construction, who's been working on a bridge there, but to somebody who put in their banking information, and then they absconded with the money. And Brad was pretty concerned about it. You're concerned about it as well. Do you live in Erie?
Well, Kim, as a matter of fact, I do.
Aha!
Uh-huh.
So what did you do last night?
So interestingly, we had the city council meeting or board of trustees meeting, and that was the first public meeting since they announced this. And, you know, there's some very curious things to this. One, they sent just the weekly update with a memo in it about, the town, i.e. the taxpayers, were victims of a fraud, and the town lost $1 million of money. And they sent this on Monday, December 30th. Uh-huh. This is 55 days after it happened. This is the first announcement to the public about $1 million of taxpayer money that was lost. Uh-huh. So interesting in a holiday week.
Most people are not paying attention to a lot of that stuff. Okay?
Correct. Monday the 30th, the holiday week, in the middle of the holidays. Just a little blurb. It also got out on 9 News, I think, earlier that day. So it might have been something about, it's out in the public now. I think we need to send that announcement. So, you know, long story short, I'd sent an email to the town administrator and said, what does this mean and how are the taxpayers going to be reimbursed for this money that was lost by the town officials? He said, well, you know, the person that made the mistake there has resigned, so that's it. Sorry about that. You know, we're not going to get paid back. And I responded and said, well, when's the next city council meeting? And it was last night. And I was there, and our friend Brad was there as well. And there were a few other local citizens that wanted to ask the question about, okay, what happened? There's been really no talk about this, and how are we going to get our money back? The mayor, she wasn't there. She must have had some other...
She was not at the town council meeting.
No, not at the town council meeting. The first public hearing since announcing that the city administration was a victim of fraud mm-hmm. and lost $1 million of the taxpayer money and has no plans to pay the taxpayers back.
So Brad had mentioned that they thought that the town might be reimbursed via insurance.
Mm-hmm. We don't know. I work in real estate, so... Fraud, wire fraud is the huge thing. And we have disclosures. We have little disclaimers on our emails. We never go through those practices. It's just common sense now. And the town doesn't make that same, they don't have the same policies, or they're just not following, or they're not paying attention. Mm-hmm. And they do things like this. And somebody calls and says, hey, I need you to change that wire information to this account over here. Oh, okay, sure, no problem. So we'll
and
just...
that's what happened?
Yeah, two times. It was $500,000 each time. So somebody just called the person at the administration and said, hey, you're responsible for getting the money to us. This is the new account number. So go ahead and wire that today. Great, thank you. Money's gone.
You know, and I think a couple of things that you see here is, first of all, transparency. And that they held this until, I think Brad said it was in a newsletter. It's like, hey, you can recycle your Christmas trees and we lost $1 million.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was it.
and the fact, so number one, they held the information. They didn't immediately make a public statement about what had happened.
Yep.
They held the information. They held it to a time which they knew would be a slow time when people would be paying attention to those things. I think one of the most troubling things that I hear on this is that I know both you and Brad reached out to the town administrator and you never heard back from them.
Well, I heard back from him.
Oh, you did?
He was
okay.
The one that told me when the city council meeting was.
Oh, okay.
And basically that, hey, the employee quit that
okay,
made
gotcha.
This mistake.
Okay.
But Brad had also emailed and never heard anything back.
Okay. So keep us apprised of what's going on there. We're going to go to break here. Before we do that, though, it's NFL playoff time. The place to watch the games is Hooters Restaurants. They have plenty of TVs, so you won't miss any of the action. Steve, do you have a team this weekend? Who are you for?
I do. KC over Tennessee after KC's performance last week, man.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But not to take anything away from the plucky Titans, 2 weeks in a row, they went into the opposing team stadium and took charge. So they're going to be tough.
Okay.
And then always Green Bay over San Francisco.
Over the Niners, huh? Okay. Well, I'm a Chiefs girl now since I'm a Kansas girl. Chris, do you have a team?
Well, since I'm a Bronco fan, it's really hard to root for the Chiefs. So
I got
to go with the Titans and Nashville.
No. That's
awesome
why I boot for the Chiefs.
There you go.
All right.
Okay. But Hooters is the place to watch all these games. You can join them for the big game, and you'll be entered for a chance to win a 55-inch HD TV. They have new roasted wings while you watch the Avs and Nuggets chase a playoff spot. The Avs lost last night in overtime.
No.
Yeah, Wednesday is Dine-In Wing Day. So today, all the wings you can eat for $15.99. And if you don't want to cook, you can have Hooters wings delivered right to your front door. For more information, go out and check out my website, Kim Munson. That's spelled MONSON.com. And it's always just great. I love it when I don't have to cook and I just have those wings delivered right to the front door. So let's go to break. We'll be right back with Chris Cantwell. He is with Trans World Business Advisors. And we'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in home ownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com. That's MONSON.com. We have all the show recaps there. We've got the podcast there, so be sure and check that out. Chris Cantwell with Trans World Business Advisors. You are a valued partner of the show. It's great to have you in studio. And it's ugly down at the State House right now. And as a businessman, you've been watching some of the things that affect businesses. And you know, I really think one of the most compassionate things that one person can give to another is the dignity of a job, the dignity of work. And it seems like these PBIs down at the State House, they really kind of have it in for business right now, at least from what I can see that you sent over to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it truly feels like business is the enemy. And, you know, everyone who owns a business is nefarious, and they're going to try to hurt people at every stance and rob people of their greed. Yeah. And, you know, what's interesting is as a business broker, I work with entrepreneurs every day and people that are looking to buy businesses. They want to get out of the corporate world, people that want to own businesses and employ people. they make huge sacrifices. You know, these people down at the state house, yeah, they don't know what it's like to make a payroll, to have to go to their banker and say, listen, I need to borrow $25,000 to make payroll this week. I'll pay back next week when my payables come in. I mean, they don't have any idea the amount of force on businesses and how frustrating and the sacrifices that business owners make. They just there's just this assumption out there, or it's just easily played out there to say, if you own a business, you're a rich, greedy, take advantage of people, take advantage of the consumers. The market doesn't allow that to happen. I mean, now with such low unemployment, it's so, the number one frustration for all business owners today is staffing. They can't find good quality staff, or they have the ability to grow their business, but they can't do it because they don't have the people to grow. Mm-hmm. So it's not that they're out there trying to take advantage of these people. The market will allow these employees to say, well, if you're going to hurt me over here, Joe down the street's hiring, I'm just going to go down the street and go work for Joe. Mm-hmm. And maybe he'll give me a raise.
But as an employee, you know, I think that an employee has a responsibility, and they will be rewarded for trying to do better, trying to help make the business successful. Yep. If you have employees that are, you know, show up at work because they want to do a better job, they want to make more money for them and their families, they want to make the business grow, they will be rewarded, yeah, particularly in this kind of a market.
Absolutely. I mean, that employees are the number one commodity for these business owners today. Mm-hmm. It's so important, and they're trying to do the right thing. And you know, I love that wages are increasing because unemployment is dropping. That's a great way, right? So why force wages on these business owners when, honestly, most of these businesses today are still not even paying this minimum wage? But when it flips in this economy, and it will, that's just a double dinger on these guys that now, you know, they've got to restructure their businesses, the market's not growing, and they're required to make these this wage commitment. And we still go back to the 16, 17, 18-year-olds that aren't getting any work experience because no one can afford to pay them.
Right. And it's not just the additional wage to the employee. Is once that wage goes up, then the employer has the additional costs of all of the employment taxes, Medicare, yeah, Social Security. So there's that ding there, and then there's this ding over here. And ultimately, you start to see people not getting hired. And it does constrict the growth of business. We were talking in the first segment about potential empty storefronts because of the forced minimum wage, and it's because it's starting to constrict business instead of allowing business to thrive and flourish.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know what it's doing is, there's one way to say it, if you want to help technology, raise the minimum wage, right? So up in Erie, there's a McDonald's that just recently opened in Erie, the first McDonald's in Erie. And you go inside, and it's a different experience. There's a very small little counter, like a one person, almost like a desk, and that's where they serve the food. But everything else is kiosks.
So here are these kids that McDonald's might be their first job?
Yep. When I was growing up, there was a statistic that one out of every six teenagers at one time had worked for McDonald's. It was the largest employer for many
young
teenagers,
people.
You know, when I grew up back in the 80s. And today, they're doing everything they can not to have employees in the business. There's robotics that are in the kitchen. There's technology that's out front. They're doing what they can to have the most minimal amount of labor to still produce a value menu, right? People still want to go there and buy things for a dollar.
Right.
To do that, you can't pay a 16-year-old $15 an hour.
Right. Okay. So what's it look like on this forced minimum wage? What are you seeing? How's
well,
this going to work?
Yeah. So in the city of Denver, effective January 1st of 2020, it went from $11.10 to $12 an hour and $9 an hour for tipped employees. So you're getting tips and you're getting $9 an hour. That's a good business to be in, to be a server in the city of Denver.
If you can find one of those jobs now.
Yeah, yeah. And then in 2021, it's going to jump to $14.77. So from $12 an hour to $14.77 a year down the road. 2022, $15.87, almost $16 an hour 2 years from now. And then 2023, they'll adjust for inflation. How does inflation happen, by the way? Does it go back to minimum wage and the cost on the consumer to buy products?
Okay. Well, that. Okay. And so Denver is, I think, is much higher than the state on the forced minimum wage. And is at this point,
correct,
there's no other entities. I think Patty mentioned yesterday, though, that Summit County is considering a, you know, increasing a forced minimum wage above that, which that's really going to hurt, you know, the industry up there, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, those folks that are up there have two seasons. They don't have four seasons. They have the summer and they have the winter. So in what we call the mud seasons, and they've got to pay this forced minimum wage, it really impacts these business owners. It's going to make it really tough on them.
Or they let people go. I know in a lot of these ski towns, then what happens is people go on unemployment for that time. And so, again, the owner gets dinged. You know what? Let's go to Jason McBride. Time always goes so quickly when you're here, Chris Cantwell. Jason McBride, it's birthdays all over your life today, huh?
Well, yeah, it sure is. First thing, very importantly, today is my wife's birthday. I'm not going to say which one, of course.
That's a good idea.
You know, oh, come on.
of her 29th birthday. And, you know, we're going to have a nice day. I'll do a couple of nice things for her and surprise her. But it's also Natalie at the Switchboard's birthday.
Okay, so and if you want to wish Natalie happy birthday at 7:30, you can call her at 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. I think, Steve, don't you have a little surprise for Jason?
Happy birthday to you. Better smile. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear.
Surprising silence.
Happy birthday to you, and I certainly hope you have a nice birthday.
That's the
all day long.
The Blinky birthday song. Jason, you and I are dating ourselves because I can remember when Blinky was around.
Blinky's Fun Club. Yeah, I can't hear it. Hopefully it's going over the airwaves.
It was. It was.
It played. It really played.
I always like that one because, you know, to me, the birthday song, it sounds like a funeral dirge. The way most people sing it, it's all, like, drawn out and, birthday to you. So the Blinky one's more fun.
It is very fun. But when we're looking at IRAs, you said that there is a funeral of sorts as well. The stretch IRA was eliminated. And what is a stretch IRA, and how did it come to be in the first place?
Well, yeah, you're right, Kim. We do kind of have a funeral of sorts there. But stretch IRAs came to life back in 2001 when the standardized IRS tables for life expectancy and required minimum distributions were created. That was Section 401A9 of the code. Before that, Kim, believe it or not, RMDs from your own IRA had to come out under a really convoluted set of rules, and there was a lot of gray area. In some ways, it was kind of a free-for-all as long as you could justify the amount you were taking out. But an inherited IRA had to be emptied within 5 years unless you were a spouse. But it's interesting, there was never any official designation in the IRS code for a stretch IRA. It was simply a set of rule changes that allowed for a much longer distribution period than 5 years. Now, a lot of people like to say that it was a loophole, but it wasn't a loophole. It was just the facts of the provisions. A loophole is when someone kind of exploits something in the rules and uses it for a purpose that was not intended. And those generally get closed pretty quick. But this was an actual strategy that was completely, totally valid and legitimate.
Okay. So question. So before 2001, it was a five-year meltdown before for the beneficiary. But what happened in 2001?
Well, in 2001, basically, the rule said a non-spousal beneficiary could use their own life expectancy to calculate the distributions on an IRA they had inherited. So, Kim, if a very young person inherited an IRA from someone, they could take really small amounts out each year and potentially stretch out the tax deferral for years or even decades.
Okay, so what's the bad news? How long do we have now?
Well, Kim, first, there is a little bit of good news. A spouse who inherits is not affected. They can still just claim the IRA as their own IRA. Also, if the beneficiary is less than 10 years younger than the deceased, so maybe you got inherited from a sibling, for example, they're also not affected. There's a few other exceptions and partial exceptions for minors and disabled beneficiaries, and very importantly, the new rules only apply to those who inherit an IRA after December 31st, 2019. Everybody that already has an inherited IRA can still use the old rules.
Okay, so what's the bad news for everybody else?
Well, for everyone else, the inherited account now has to be emptied out within 10 years. Now, there's no limits or restrictions on it. You can take out as much as you want or none at all in any given year, as long as the balance of the account is zero by the end of the 10th year. Now, I'm not, Kim, 100% clear if it's the 10th year right to the anniversary of the date of death, or if they're saying it's like December 31st of the 10th year following the date of death. I didn't see that clarity, but we'll figure it out.
Okay, and Jason, I saw when this first came out, I think, or when first talked about it in December, that this actually increases taxes for Uncle Sam because he wants to get that money out of that tax-deferred status as quickly as possible so that they can get, so they, meaning Uncle Sam, can get their hands on those taxes.
Well, yeah, agreed. As per usual, the government wants as much as they can get right now versus the potential of a steady, you know, stream of income over many, many years. So nothing different about that.
Okay, what about the inherited Roth IRAs? Is it the same deal?
Yeah, it is, Kim. 10 years on those two, but at least the money coming out of an inherited Roth isn't taxable, which is a plus, and this could be another reason to convert IRA money to Roth. Think about it. If your kids inherit a big IRA during their peak earnings years and they have to melt it down over 10 years, those are larger withdrawals that are taxable, and that could be really painful. Now, an inherited Roth doesn't have that problem. One other thing, don't forget withdrawals from inherited IRAs, whether they're traditional or Roth, they're never subject to the 10% under age 59 and a half penalty like your own IRA. They're always exempt from that.
Okay, Jason, this is such important information, and this is just one of the provisions of the SECURE Act, and we're dissecting this every day this week, and you have a report available that summarizes all this.
That's right. You can get that by going to airpresidential.com. That's airpresidential.com. Or today especially, give Natalie a call at the switchboards at 7:30 and let her know you'd like to have a copy, and make sure to wish her happy birthday too.
That's for sure. And that number is 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. Jason, I'm excited to hear what nugget of information you have tomorrow.
All right. Have a great show, Kim.
Thanks so much. And have Chris Cantwell with Trans World Business Advisors in studio with me. He is in the business of helping people thrive and flourish. And on the line, when we come back, we'll be talking with former state senator Kevin Lundberg. He is the author of the Lundberg Report. Go be sure and sign up for that. Important information. And he is talking about some of the legislation that has been introduced down at the State House. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. We're going to be having a conversation with former State Senator Kevin Lundberg. He is the author of the Lundberg Report. And I have Chris Cantwell with Trans World Business Advisors in studio with me. Senator Lundberg, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Kim. It's great to be with you.
I have to tell you, I have a listener out from the Eastern Plains, Janie. She always says from the Eastern Plains, and I get your report, but she does as well, and I appreciate it because she will flag me if she thinks there's something that she, you know, that I should not miss. And she had flagged me on what you had regarding these bad bills that were first introduced. So tell us about that, Senator Lundberg.
Well, yeah, and actually let me put this within the context of the session started last week. This is just the first wave of bills to come our way, and I don't see any of the real big, ugly ones that some are expecting to see. But there are about 10 of them that I found out of the gate initially that concerned me. Here, and let me just run down real quick. House Bill 1006, which sets up mental health consultants to monitor families from prenatal through age 8. Government poking their nose into every family's business to you know, monitor how their kids are being treated from a mental health perspective. That troubles me. 1008, heavy regulations on medical cost-sharing programs. Look, medical cost-sharing programs are an alternative to medical insurance that thousands of families here in Colorado utilize, and literally, you know, a million or two of country. And 1008 might make it so difficult for cost-sharing programs to exist in Colorado that they will leave the state. That's a fairly big one. House Bill 1018 increases natural gas costs with production of renewable natural gas. It's going to require utilities to provide what they call renewable natural gas, which are alternative ways of producing natural gas. That's great when it can be found cost effectively, but this sets some standards up, so they've got to produce this, and it will the cost of natural gas, which they mention in the bill too, that PUC will allow them to raise their rates over that. 1019, find ways to end private prisons by 2025. We've got a system in Colorado where we've got the Department of Corrections and then kind of an overflow valve for private prisons. Well, this bill says we want private prisons to go away. So, you know, it's a good system. It's not broke, but they want to try to fix it anyway. 1065,
okay.
Open up free needle exchange programs by any entity without any government oversight. That's just another step down the road of empowering drug addiction rather than really going after the causes and prevention of this scourge in our culture. 1081 expands multi-language election ballots and instructs county clerks to work really hard if somebody can't read an English ballot to provide it in any language at any time, either through printed or translation service. Color me just a little bit skeptical that we have to provide election information in every language in the world. Rather than encourage people, if you don't want to vote, I think you ought to understand
know the language.
What's on the ballot?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we are not a multi-language country. Yes, we have people from other countries, and I like that. But I want them, if they're voting citizens, to be able to interact at every level. And that includes the language. Senate Bill 10 allows local governments to ban certain plastics. So, you know, right now, Colorado law says local governments cannot have this patchwork of you can't, you know, bring polystyrene or something else into our city and sell it or use it. Let's see. Senate Bill 38, I think, is a little bit of a sleeper. It requires biodiesel to be put into every diesel fuel tank, which not every diesel engine can handle. But they think it's a great idea to force biodiesel into all diesel products in the state. Senate Bill 65, require hands-free cell phones while driving. This is a pretty touchy one, which will affect everybody and probably make everybody a lawbreaker at one time or another, because it says you can't handle your phone. If you've got a hands-free device, yeah, you can use that. But anyway, that's the short list.
Okay. I just very quickly wanted to go down a few words here, and Chris, then I want you to weigh in, and then we'll go back to Senator Lundberg. But as you went through this, I'm going to just mention this. House Bill 1006, the word monitor. Okay, we talk about freedom versus force. House Bill 1008, regulations. House Bill 1018, increase the costs with the production of renewable natural gas. There's force all over that. HB 1019 on the prisons one, get rid of private enterprise in that. HB 1065 opens up this free needle exchange programs, and here you have government enabling people to destroy themselves. HB 1081 is expanding multi-language election ballots. So instead of having people assimilate and become Americans, we are pandering to people not doing that. And it used to be when people came to America, on my paternal side, my ancestors came from Germany. And it was important to them that they spoke English when they went to school. They still spoke German at home, but they wanted to assimilate and become Americans. SB 10 is banning. You hear the word ban. 1038, require biodiesel. 1065, require hands-free cell phones. Chris Cantwell, your quick comment on this.
I always like the phrase press 2 for English.
Yeah, on that.
Every time I go to the ATM now, that's, you know, press 2 for English.
Yeah.
You know, you got to go back to the public, right? So these people get elected in, and you got to go back to the voters and say, voters, what are you thinking? What is your end game? What is it that you want? What is it that you don't understand? They play on envy, right? Somebody's got something more than you. Well, government can fix that. If your neighbor's driving a Mercedes and you're driving a Toyota and you don't think that's right, you can have a third party come in and try to make it right just for you. They're playing on envy. And it just hurts so many people at the end of the day. You know, private property, we really don't have our private property anymore. Government can come in and force you to do this, can tell you what you can do, can tell you what you can't do, can tell you what benefits you have to pay your employees, can tell you where you live, where you can't live. It just, the cycle is endless, and I never understand the end game. And many times when I meet people that say, oh, you know, I'm a big Democrat, and I believe in this, this, and this, and I ask the simple question, well, what's the end game? What is the end game?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you try to go? They don't ever have that answer.
So, Kevin Lundberg, let's ask you that question. Actually, let's go to break so that we can expound upon this. What do you think the end game is with what we see just coming right out of the chute here and down at the State House? So let's go to break. This is Kim Munson, The Kim Munson Show. Chris Cantwell, Transworld Business Advisors, is in studio. He's a valued partner and sponsor. And Senator Kevin Lundberg, author of The Lundberg Report, is on the line. And former State Senator Kevin Lundberg. We'll be right back.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of The Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email kim@kimmunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim at Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to The Kim Munson Show. Chris Cantwell in studio with me. On the line with me is former State Senator Kevin Lundberg. He is the author of The Lundberg Report. Kevin, how can people get your weekly letter on this? Because there is so much important information in there.
Well, for the next 4 months. We're going to have a lot to talk about with the mission, but do this year-round. I actually serve as the executive director for the Study Committee of Colorado, and that's kind of the context I publish it in. But you can just go to my website, kevinlundberg.com, and click on subscribe, and you get a free report on this. Try to kick it out every weekend.
Okay. So the question on the table, Kevin, when we went to break, and Krista kind of teed this up, is what's the end game? And when I ask you that question, I know a woman who is kind of paying attention. And I would say she's probably more center-left, but can, you know, is really probably right in the center. She's a businesswoman. And she's also, I think she can't believe that anybody would have any nefarious ideas. She's very, you know, believes in just the best in everybody. And that's one of the questions she always says is, why would they do that? What's the end game? How would you answer that?
I think it's a great question, because you really do need to look down the road when you're legislating and ask yourself, because you can make a great argument for any bill at some level. You know, this will help so-and-so, so shouldn't we ought to do this? But when I started in the legislature back in 2003, you know, nearly 20 years ago now, I looked around and I asked myself, so what are we trying to accomplish? And for some, it is just that practical, short-sighted view of, I want to, you know, a constituent came to me and I want to fix this. But if you put it all together, there are really two visions of government. One is limited government with a free people, and that's what I see embodied in our founding documents and what I try to ascribe to. But a lot of people think the government ought to be in charge of everything. If there's a problem out there, the government ought to fix it. And they never look at the raw, cold reality that for every problem they fix, they probably create two or three. There's a term we use. 20 years ago, it was a bit impolite to mention it, but today it's right out there in front in presidential politics. It's called socialism. It's called the government controlling and essentially owning everything and telling everybody what they need to do. Or here's another word that we don't use yet, but I think it's very applicable. It's called tyranny. That's what we don't want to do, but that's what we're doing step by step by step with a whole lot of this legislation.
Okay, so speaking of that, let's go back over here to House Bill 1006. When you mentioned the word tyranny, and first of all, mental health seems to be the new buzzword. And I'd had Jim Lewis on, who is a licensed practicing counselor. And I asked him, I said, what is mental health? And he says, do you know what? Nobody really has ever asked him that question. And he has been in that industry for many years. So what is mental health? And do we think government can really help people have good mental health? I talk to PBIs on both sides of the aisle that they talk about mental health and that it is the role of government to promote mental health. Well, what does that mean exactly? But man, there's a whole bunch of different government programs. But so let's look at this. House Bill 1006, mental health consultants to monitor families from prenatal through age 8. This looks to me like surveillance tyranny on families who are just trying to figure out how to raise their kids. What do you think, Kevin Lundberg?
Absolutely. You are quite correct. And Kim, you do ask the question that very few people really want to go down that road. But mental health is a very subjective term that, well, let's put it within the context of what they did pass last year, and that's the big sex ed bill that requires a perspective on what is what should be happening within sexual activity among people, basically, and that's got a lot of morals tied in, where it assumed the LGBT perspective on life and really repressed more of a traditional Christian perspective or a biblical perspective. I see the same thing here, where where this mental health consultant, which is an interesting term, too, because we're not talking about psychologists or psychiatrists. There's this new category of anybody who's supposed to know that people are doing the right thing mentally or not, or, you know, or they have a good attitude. I don't know what they're trying to say, really. But for them to think that they should place somebody in oversight of every young family is deeply concerning. Now, if you read carefully, the bill says for the child, and that's another catchphrase.
For the children?
That, you know, mm-hmm. Yeah. If it's for the children, it's a good idea. See, but what really caught my eye was they are to start at prenatal. Well, they're not interviewing the child. They, you know, a pregnant woman presents herself to in some, you know, public government system, and apparently they then identify, aha, here's somebody we need to send a consultant over and make sure that that she's doing everything right. Well, she ought to have a doctor who's, or a midwife or somebody who's helping her in that, you know, this very special time in her and her child's existence and life. But for the government to think that they need to send somebody in to monitor this and then keep in touch for, you know, at least 8 years is smacks of tyranny. It smacks of stuff that, you know, we used to read novels about awful cultures that actually fell into this trap. Well, guess what? These are legitimate bills that are being considered, and most of these bills are being sponsored by the people who are going to get their bills passed this year. Because I could give you a list of really good bills, and I will do that this next week.
Okay.
Some of the really good bills that have been out there, but they're, the wrong people are running them, and they're going to kill them.
Right, they're going to kill them. So I've got a comment that I want to make on that. Chris, though, let's go to you quickly. Any comments?
Yeah, I just think, I question whether or not there's this validity of purpose, right? So you see these people that go out and do mass shootings. You know that they go to school and they can't say the Pledge of Allegiance. They can't have religion in their school. They're told that they're collective. They're told that government's always going to take care of them. I think people are going through life with no purpose. And I think that's what we're calling mental health when we're teaching them that they have no value.
Boy, I have to agree with you. And that's why every morning when I start this show, I want people to know, each of you are treasured, you are valued, you have a purpose, and go out there and strive for excellence. Senator Lundberg, I used to think that it was above my pay grade to read this legislation. It's not. And in fact, I think yesterday we had given the information. I think Zach has it out. I'll have to make sure of how people can follow these bills. But you just indicated something interesting. And that is on this very bad surveillance tyranny monitoring bill, which is House Bill 1006. Can you imagine a young family having a consultant come in and check on and see how you're doing? But you mentioned that in this bill they refer to prenatal. And I want to say, hold the phone just a moment. These are the folks that say that before a baby is born, a baby's not a baby. And they have shown their hand, if what I think is in there is in there, is that, in fact, if they're going to be monitoring prenatal, they are acknowledging something about life. I think that's kind of cool.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up. There was actually a bill several years ago concerning crimes against pregnant women where it stated outright. It said, human beings not yet born are not afforded any constitutional rights. So they stated two things, and I agree. I looked at it and I thought, well, what do you know? They're calling them human beings. They're acknowledging the reality of it.
Uh-huh.
But then they went right on to say, but there is no constitutional right. And then the bill goes on and creates some crimes against the woman, the mother, which is certainly crimes. But it explicitly excluded the child as having any moral presence in a, you know, situation where maybe the child is killed or severely damaged by somebody. That's not a problem for them.
But
I say them. That's kind of the, you know, those who step in, and it's the majority party that's in, you know, that's running things right now.
Right. And Patty just texted me. She said, if prenatal, doesn't that make a strong argument against abortion? That's just the light bulb that went on with me on this as well, but the surveillance tyranny. So we're now we have a bill that says government can come into young families and watch what they're doing. But yet, on the other hand, we have Governor Polis, who wants to fund, you know, all day kindergarten, wants to fund preschools. And yet, where could we, everyday people, monitor what's going on there? I don't see that protection. Kevin, we are just about out of time. So what's your final thought? And again, how can people sign up for your newsletter?
Well, I think my final thought is stay tuned, because there's a lot out there. You're quite correct. You need to read the bills yourself. I'll give you some starting points, but if you go to my, you know, get my reports, there's a link for each one of these bills. So you can click on and you can see it yourself. You can see what the legislature says about it. Kim, keep up the fight. We've got plenty to work on, and there's a lot more that we haven't seen that we will in just a few weeks.
Okay, well, we'll get you back on, former State Senator Kevin Lundberg, the author of the Lundberg Report. So thank you so much. And Chris Cantwell with Transworld Business Advisors, thank you. It's always great to have you in studio.
Thank you, Kim. I enjoy being here.
It's like fasten your seatbelt. It goes fast.
There we go.
So our quote for today is from Ronald Reagan. And he said, government is like a baby, an alimentary canal with a big appetite on one end and no sense of responsibility on the other. So that is Ronald Reagan. So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you. God bless America.